This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County health officials report 87 new COVID-19 cases. That comes as the county's testing positivity rate bounced up a full percentage point to 5.3%. The new cases were found in a batch of about 1,000 test results returned the past day. Testing appears to be down significantly from the last week. The average number of daily tests last week was over 1,400. Hospitalizations, meanwhile, remain at a record high. There were 59 county residents hospitalized with COVID right now, and that's an increase of one person overnight. McLean County's active caseload is at its lowest level in 3 weeks. There are about 484 people isolating at home, with an additional 142 now considered fully recovered. With roughly 30% of Illinois' population fully vaccinated against COVID, the state is hitting a vaccine plateau, where most everyone who definitely wants a shot has gotten at least one. Governor J.B. Pritzker says Illinois is now at the point where vaccine supply has basically met demand. Now, health officials and healthcare providers must focus on those who are hesitant.
I think we all know somebody who at the beginning said, I don't think I want to get this vaccine. And then as time has gone on, they've known people, they have friends or family members that have been vaccinated. And then maybe a month later, you run into them and they say, yeah, I think I'm going to go get my vaccination now.
Pritzker says he hopes that soon every Illinoisan will have access to a COVID vaccine at their doctor's office. Research shows those hesitant about taking a vaccine are more likely to listen to their personal physician than any other sources like government or the media. At Illinois State University, researcher says artificial intelligence could be the next frontier in cybersecurity. Sean Wu is ISU's new State Farm Endowed Chair of Cybersecurity. He says machine learning can help by making it easier to recognize suspicious patterns in network traffic and therefore system intrusions. But there's a flip side. Bad guys can use it too.
For example, they can, you know, use AI to basically better, like, hide themselves. So it's hard to really identify who is the right one, who initiates the attacks.
ISU's cybersecurity program has grown to nearly 350 students, with plans to move into a newly remodeled space in Julian Hall in the fall. You're listening to Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Gina Barnhart.
It sounds funny, but I feel more independent because I can actually hear people and I have more confidence in that. It's such an empowering feeling.
Gina's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner's second and final term ends this week, and Bokum Olamoy will be sworn in Saturday. I spoke to Renner today about his 8 years in office, what he got done and what he didn't.
We certainly made lots of progress, I believe, on lots of fronts. There are some things I wish I'd have regrets not because there was an opportunity that was missed, but that we didn't make more progress, and that is for a stronger anchor in downtown. We had lots of progress in downtown in many, many ways over the last 8 years, and a renewed energy certainly in downtown, and proper signage and parking issues, lots of things, and the Route 66 Visitor Center, the Convention Visitor Bureau coming downtown. But I would like to have had some sort of hotel conference center that would replace the front and center building, and that's something we just weren't able to make happen. The councils at the time did not want to take the risks that were necessary on the two waves of proposals that we had. And then we had one proposal that was just absolutely dead on arrival, couldn't even seriously consider. But I think that would have been really very helpful in being a game changer in our downtown, a major quick game changer. But I'm hoping that still will happen. But certainly one of the things that we have made progress in that I think is going to be very difficult to go back on is blowing open the doors to City Hall. When I first ran, I used the metaphor of City Hall surrounded by windows. So not only do you not have to fight City Hall, but anyone can come in and look inside, no matter where they're from, no matter who they are in the city, and see what they're paying for. And so we certainly had, for example, very quickly, we went from having an F from the Illinois Policy Institute out of Chicago that rates local governments in Illinois to an A+ and 100%, and we've gotten transparency, online transparency, and other kinds of awards. And we've had, of course, the Bloomington 101. I had regular mayoral open houses, and try to do as much as we can to listen to citizens and understand that it is their government, and they should have a very important voice.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you expect not just the next mayor to face, but maybe the next couple of mayors to face?
I think the biggest challenges are the kind of challenges we have at the national level and state level, and they've reared their ugly head many times here locally. And from the very beginning, even before I was elected mayor, And that is people using social media, sometimes disguising themselves, pretending to be journalists, who are poisoning the political environment. And that's not just on the right, there's some on the left. We've just seen much more of it locally on the right, with just really vicious, nasty stuff.
How do you think that you've changed personally over these 8 years? What does, 2021 Terry think of 2013 Terry?
I was hopelessly naive, thinking that I could reach, maybe not everybody, but almost everybody. That was absurd. I never thought that I could please everybody. I mean, don't misunderstand me, but I certainly thought that if I just sat people down and we worked through some of the evidence, we could at least walk away and realize that there are some common goals we can work toward. And unfortunately, that's not the case. I've pretty much always had pretty thick skin, but I've had, you have to have rhino hide on steroids, and that certainly has developed.
I remember back in 2017, you took a leave of absence for medical reasons, and you've never really talked about why you did that publicly. But I've interviewed you a bunch of times before and after that, and I certainly noticed a change. I think after that you were a lot more controlled in your rhetoric. You seemed a little mellower to me as we were talking. Granted, Tim Gleason took over as city manager not long after that, so that probably helped a little bit. But
that helped enormously.
How did that period that leave and what came after? How did that change you?
I think it was a month. It was September of 2017, and it wasn't. Let's also be clear: you're never not mayor. So it wasn't. It's not like I didn't get texts and emails and phone calls every day. It's just I didn't chair the council meetings, and I didn't do the media interviews. And that gave me a little bit of time also to refocus and repurpose some of my efforts some of my work at Illinois Wesleyan as well, which was critical. But I think it is in many of the ways that you've talked about it. It also gave me a time to even though I was still running around, not running around, but still extremely busy, it was definitely a time where, comparatively speaking, I was able to step back a little bit and try to gain a little perspective. Hmm. But one of the biggest changes, though, by the year after that was, of course, the arrival of Mr. Gleason. And he was just, to say he's a breath of fresh air is the understatement. And some of that is not just because he's good, but because the city manager, especially the first city manager that I had, it's hard to believe that I didn't blow my brains out for 5 years, frankly. Not because that somebody was evil, but just a city manager is supposed to do what they're told. Those were unbelievably frustrating and aggravating years, frankly. We still made progress, but it was clearly in spite of the previous city manager, not because of anything that he did.
Well, being mayor in Bloomington, or being on the council in Bloomington, or being the Bloomington city manager is interesting because not only you're being compared to other cities in Illinois and across the country, I mean, there's literally a city next door to yours that people can always hold you up against and say, "Well, why doesn't Bloomington do it this way? Normal does it this way." Or, "Look what Normal's doing. Why isn't Bloomington doing that?" And did that ever weigh on you or annoy you? And how did you handle all that?
Well, let me get, of course, it, sometimes when people would do things, it would annoy me, but maybe not that the comparison per se, but sometimes when it was skewed. It was frustrating to me when people seemed to have tunnel vision or try to operate in a silo, and they were doing little to nothing to get any broader perspective, and sometimes wouldn't even talk to their colleagues across Division Street in Normal. And that was frustrating to aggravating, for sure.
This past election, we had a lot of incumbents who chose not to run again. In Bloomington, Johnny Painter, Kim Bray, obviously you, everyone on the Unit 5 school board, and I think none of the incumbents ran again. There were obviously some exceptions, the town of Normal council folks, they did run again. Can you speak to the challenge of getting good, qualified people to run for local office, and what are some of the barriers there we need to find a way to get past?
Certainly the extent to which people are not just criticized, you got to have thick skin, but absolutely consistently savaged in, frankly, sometimes just idiotic, beyond irresponsible ways. And I do know that one of the candidates I was hoping, and I'll keep his identity, confidential, but one of the candidates I was hoping would run for mayor, who did not, said that essentially there's no way I want to deal with stuff like that. And, you know, I can laugh. I kind of laughed about it at that point. I was used to being savaged, but not everybody is, and not everybody can adapt. You could potentially put your family and others and loved ones through some things that are just way beyond uncomfortable.
That's Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner, whose second and final term comes to an end this week. Mayor-elect Mboko Milamwe will be sworn in on Saturday. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. The deception may start with a phone call and an offer to invest money that sounds too good to be true, or a seemingly believable plea for money to rescue a grandchild from serious trouble. For millions of older adults who answer such calls, the consequences can be devastating. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, fraud accounts for $3 billion in losses each year. Correspondent Edith Brady Lunny recently spoke to the acting U.S. Attorney for Central Illinois, Doug Quivy, and McLean County's top prosecutor, Don Knapp. Quivy says it's a growing problem.
Before the pandemic, it was estimated that about 13% of elderly people in America were victim of fraud. Anecdotally, that's at least doubled, if not tripled, with the isolation and just situation of the pandemic. So we're just seeing an implosion of it. But kind of the five broad categories of the scams are, number one, are just charity and other organizations directly asking for money, but people don't check, is the charity legitimate, is the person legitimate, and they're just sending people money, you know, that aren't the charity. There's a wide variety of healthcare scams, some COVID-related, some not, that they want their medical information, and then their information gets sold over the dark net. And it, the third type, relationship scams. We see a lot of your grandson's in trouble, you know, he's in Afghanistan, needs money to come back. And then a very, very large amount of romance scams, online grooming. We had one case that they groomed the elderly person for over a year before they asked for money. The next broad category is imposter scams, IRS, Social Security, law enforcement, Secret Service. Most recent one is U.S. Marshals, where they say, you know, this is the IRS calling, you owe us money, you need to send money immediately. And then finally are broad-based lottery scams, where you basically have to send money to make money. Some of it's overseas. Check over payments. But those are the five kind of broad categories of what we're seeing.
And how about locally? I'm thinking you might see a different kind of fraud that happens. It's mainly, I mean, you think it's closer to home, right?
Well, the grooming that Doug talks about, we see a lot of that locally too. And an example is we know the perpetrators are combing the obituaries. You have a widow or widower at home. They make online contact with them. It may be romantic. It may just be friendship. They groom them for some time, going as far as in an individual that everybody in this room would know, sending that individual clothes from overseas and a cashier's check saying, I'm coming over to be with you. Oh, now I just need a little bit of that before you put it in the bank, and you send a little bit. And we see that. We see that. We see all of these things locally. But what we see and we prosecute more often than not is family members or other people in positions of trust that deplete an elderly person's financial resources to the tune of where they don't have enough money to live, either if they're in a nursing home or assisted care facility, they don't have the money to make their monthly payments, or they can't make their mortgage payments anymore. And that's usually when we get involved.
How do these cases come to your attention?
I've gotten calls from nursing home administrators saying they think this is going on, and we refer them to the proper law enforcement authority to go out, and they take a report and they do an investigation. So it's somebody who has contact with the victim, either a family member who's not engaging in the scheme to deplete the assets, or somebody who just, as Doug says, it could be a bank teller. And in my case, it's been either nursing home administrators or family members.
What are some of your challenges to being able to pursue a case?
There's a lot of shame and embarrassment associated with this. And I think, I mean, we've had university professors who have been scammed, retired police officers, physicians, who's who, because part of it, it connects with, you know, cognitive decline and issues, and it all kind of runs together. So the first step is just getting people to come forward. They're hesitant to tell family members. So that's step one.
There is no shame in any of this. And I think the longer, as with any crime, but especially this type of crime, the longer it goes unreported, the less likely the victim is to get any financial resources back. Mm-hmm. The sooner it is reported, as Doug said, the Secret Service has some powers and potentially can get a significant amount of the money back, if not all of it, if we can or they can reverse the transfer.
On the federal side, our biggest concern, and frankly, we first want to try to stop it and seize the money. Secret Service has some seizure power that's pretty broad, and to try to prevent the situation getting worse. But overall, our biggest hurdle is to identify who the perpetrator is. I mean, there's some international call centers in India and Nigeria and elsewhere that have been shut down, but is to shut it down.
That's Acting U.S. Attorney for Central Illinois, Doug Quivy, and McLean County's top prosecutor, Don Knapp. They spoke with Edith Brady Lunny. Later this week on Sound Ideas, you'll hear from Katherine Johnson, the Director of Adult Protective Services at PATH, on the same issue. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. Organic food growers have seen a boost in demand since the pandemic began, as also demand for more people to farm the land. As more farmers get set to retire, Eric Stock reports on whether there will be enough farmers to take their place.
Ron Ackerman and his wife Angie grow corn, soybeans, grains, and an array of vegetables on a 320-acre farm south of Shenoah in northern McLean County. The farm has been in the Ackerman family for nearly a century. Ron Ackerman says he shifted to organic production about 3 decades ago. It wasn't easy.
Back in the early 1990s, had I had a cell phone, I probably would have called my good friend at Shenaw FS and told him, spray these weeds, I can't stand it anymore.
Ackerman says the shift to organic took a few years to take hold, and now he says it's the only way to go for the sake of the environment. There weren't many organic farmers back then. There are many more now. But quite a few of them, like Ackerman, will be retiring in the coming years. Many in the industry worry what will happen to the farmland then.
We are in the middle of the largest generational land transfer in the country.
That's Cassidy Delorto-Blackwell. She's the Farmer Training Program Manager at the Land Connection. The Champaign-based nonprofit trains new farmers across Illinois and advocates for community-based food systems. Delorto-Blackwell says a lot of specialty family farms are in jeopardy as children move away and don't want to take over, and it's not always easy to find a buyer. Delorto-Blackwell says new farmers looking to get into the business face obstacles. If they don't have a family connection, acquiring land is expensive. Farmland values are rising. Smaller specialty growers don't need and can't afford the larger tracts of land most farmers are trying to sell. There's the cost of farm equipment, health insurance, and for many student loans. The Land Connection is fundraising to develop a program to help new farmers acquire land. Still, Delorto-Blackwell says there are plenty of young people looking to get into farming for various reasons.
To some degree, there's romanticism. I mean, it's a romantic idea, back to the land. I assume for a lot of people, it's, you know, just a care for the environment, concern about, you know, climate change, concern about
Delorto-Blackwell says farmers can also be successful selling organic produce. She says profit margins are higher and more diversity provides a cushion from market instability. Katie Bishop and her family own Prairie Earth Farm near Atlanta in Logan County. Bishop says she got into farming because it was a way for her to make a difference in a way the corporate world couldn't.
I get to take this business and create avenues for people to get healthy food in the way that I want to. We can make a difference in people's lives in the way that I want to, that I see, more than just handling an auto claim.
Katie and her husband Hans Bishop started farming part-time over a decade ago. They now work the land full-time and have 15 full-time workers during the growing season. Katie Bishop says business keeps getting better as more people seek out locally grown organic food. She says demand picked up during the pandemic, but says COVID-19 also provided an inflection point for their family. It caused them to reassess priorities to regain their lives beyond farming.
We're moving forward in a way post-COVID, hopefully soon to be post-COVID, where we can spend more time with our families and our friends. I didn't realize how badly I missed them and wanted to be with them until I couldn't be.
The Bishops don't plan to retire anytime soon, but they are scaling back. Prairie Earth will no longer sell with the Bloomington Farmers Market during the spring and summer. Katie Bishop says they plan to rely more on what they sell to grocery stores and restaurants and through their Community Supported Agriculture Program, or CSA. That's where customers can sign up for regular produce pickups. Katie Bishop says they don't yet have a clear succession plan for when they retire. The Bishops don't have children. Katie Bishop says maybe some of their employees will want to take over the farm. Bishop says she and her husband may want to turn it into a nature preserve, but she says she wants to make sure the diversity the Bishops have built into this farmland will benefit future generations.
My big thing is I just don't want it either put back into a corn and soybean rotation, or I don't want houses built on it.
Tara Brockman does outreach for several of her family's organic farms in central Illinois. Brockman says succession planning can't start too soon and it must be updated regularly.
It's something that needs to be talked about and thought about, you know, before the funeral, which seems to be when most people start to think about it, and then they just put it up for auction and, you know, we know how that goes.
Brockman says her brother Henry Brockman will likely farm until he takes his last breath. She says concerns about climate change in recent years have reinvigorated Henry Brockman. He's trying to make his farmland in the Mackinac Valley in Woodford County more resistant to floods and the other weather events that have happened with increased regularity. Tara Brockman says she understands why it's hard for some farmers to plan for after retirement. She says their farms and their businesses are deeply personal.
There's real strong connections, generally the multi-generational connections, with no matter what kind of farm we're talking about. It's not just like you're selling widgets and you're going to pass on your business of selling widgets that you're not very connected to.
Ron Ackerman's Shinoa Farm won't stay in the family much longer. Ackerman is 74, and he hopes to farm 3 more years to reach the 100-year anniversary of the family operation. Ackerman's 3 children aren't interested in taking over the family business. Ackerman has an agreement with a young farmer, Aaron Hand, to take over the organic farm operation.
This opportunity, if it works out, it more just landed in my lap than me going after it.
Aaron Hand of Shinoa is 32. He grew up in a farm family. He says he never planned to get into agriculture until he studied nutrition and how the Western diet of highly processed foods was unhealthy. Hand says he's looking to acquire more farmland and eventually add livestock to his operation, but he plans to stay relatively small and organic. He says he'd like to see more organic farms in central Illinois, but he says he understands it's not for everybody. He says there's plenty of farmland for organic and conventional farmers to feed the world.
There can be a lot of animosity between organic farmers and conventional, and everyone thinking that the other side is their enemy.
But Ron Ackerman is more adamant in seeing small organic farms stay that way. Ackerman says he's afraid they'll eventually get gobbled up by the bigger ag companies that are more interested in mass producing feed for animals than food for humans. Ackerman says the quality of the food we eat will also suffer.
We are pushing farmers to produce more production with less inputs over a quicker amount of time. And there's only so far you can cut that window and have the same amount of nutrition.
Ackerman says he's glad to see wind turbines as part of a green energy movement going on around his farm. Ackerman says he wants big ag companies to think about more than just the green in their wallets. I'm Eric Stock.
The Organic Produce Network reports organic food sales rose 14% last year. That outpaced the rise in sales of conventional produce. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Ryan Denham. We had story help today from Edith Brady-Lunny and Eric Stock. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.